Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And we're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. These are challenging times, and Rocket Mortgage is prepared to help. If you need mortgage assistance, contact their team 24/7 at rocketmortgage.com. From their home to yours, the team at Rocket Mortgage is with you. We're all craving hockey, and we hope we get to see some playoff hockey this year. There is that 2014 playoff proposal that is on the table, and things look optimistic right now. We will head out to the hotline, though, and chat a little pucks right now with the Arizona Coyotes center, and that is Derek Stepan, kind enough to give us a few minutes right now on the Zach Gelb Show. Derek, first off, thanks for joining us. How are you and your family doing?
We're doing good. We're doing really good. We're just like pretty much everybody else right now. We've kind of got the same routine going down each day, but we're good and we're happy.
We all know everyone's lives have been flipped upside down through this in the last 2-3 months. When you got that announcement that the NHL was postponing their season and now we're in this guessing game, take me back to that day where the NBA was first and then the NHL did follow.
Yeah, we had a practice. We were just coming off the road. We were in Canada. And we kind of had heard that we were playing San Jose the following week, and we had already been told that that game was postponed, that we were not going to play that game. So going forward, we were kind of thinking when we were in practice, we're like, man, this whole season might be postponed right now. And sure enough, after practice that day, on the way home, we got a notification from our general manager that our game against Vancouver the next night was postponed, and we would get more updates later. And then by the next day, we were told that for now the season's on hold. So it was a crazy 24 hours, but we kind of saw it coming because, like I said, we had a game against San Jose, and at the time I think the San Jose area had closed everything to larger groups. So we knew that things were going to start to go in that direction.
I don't want to say we take the sport for granted, and there were signs that obviously the sport was going to shut down for a while. As someone, though, that has been involved in hockey his entire life, when you got that notification, you got that announcement that the season was shutting down, I know you said it wasn't surprising, but was it at all a little bit shocking just because that's the reality where if I would have told you that 2 months ago, someone would look at me and say, what the heck are you talking about?
Yeah, I just, you know, the thing was, is it's just such a crazy time. I mean, me and my wife talk about it all the time. It just the way the world is going right now, it's super unique. And yeah, if you would have told me a month prior to it that the NHL season was going to stop at 71 and we were going to wait for, you know, what are we on, week 10 now, I would have looked at you like you had 8 heads. So yeah, it's unique times, it's crazy times. Obviously this thing is way bigger than sports, so you know as a group, you know, our main focus was our families and our, you know, our friends and making sure that everyone's safe. And then you obviously go on from there. And as the world starts to come back to life a little bit here, we get ourselves ready to go.
What have you been doing to try to stay in shape? Because we know athletes like to prepare, but right now it's tough to prepare with not knowing what's going to happen.
Yeah, I got some rollerblades sent to me, and I've kind of picked up rollerblading. When I was down in Arizona, it was a little warm to be rollerblading around everywhere. But I actually came back to Minnesota, and I've been able to get some rollerblades in. Nice brisk air here in Minnesota.
What do you think you learned about yourself, Derek Stepan, through this process, through the last few months?
That's a deep question. Firing on all cylinders here. What have I learned about myself? Well, I've learned that there are certain jobs that I certainly feel for the people that have to do them. Like currently, I'm actually, right before you called, I was putting together an actual hockey net for me and my son. So the guys that do that every day, kudos to them, because what a process that is. And, you know, my wife doing the family stuff. What a job that she has, and what a great job she does at it, because I wouldn't be very good at it. She keeps the house moving and functioning and does it without breaking a sweat. I feel like at the end of the day, I'm exhausted.
Derek Stepan here with us. How old is your son?
I have a four-year-old, four and a half, and my daughter is 2.5.
How do you explain it to a four-year-old, just wondering?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, we kind of present it as there's a lot of sick people out there, and we need to just stay very safe. And, you know, they keep themselves busy. You know, they're at a kind of – I think we're kind of lucky. I think it'd be harder if you had an older kid. You know, they're good as long as we got something for them to do for the day. They can occupy themselves and tire themselves out. I think if you had that 8 to 12 range, I think it'd be very hard to explain why they can't do things and continue to give them something to do each day.
Talking to Derek Stepan from the Arizona Coyotes right now on the Zach Gelb Show. So we've seen this 2014 playoff proposal. You guys would make the postseason in the Western Conference. What are your thoughts on this proposal right now, Derek?
Well, I think, like I said, unique times. There's a lot of, I always call them hurdles. I think there's a lot of hurdles that need to be jumped in order for everything to get back to us playing hockey. Everyone's looking from both sides, the NHL and the Players Association, is looking for what could be the best possible scenario. And this one was one that was presented, and I think obviously it went to a vote. We don't have the results yet, and I don't know when those will officially come out, but I don't know. I think that there's arguments for everything, and it's just trying to find something that makes sense, that checks as many boxes as possible. And I have my personal opinion on it, and I'm going to keep it to myself for now. But, yeah, I think there's a lot of scenarios that check a lot of boxes, and you go from there.
I did see a tweet from Bob McKenzie an hour ago, and he said the expected results of that vote is the NHLPA will approve the NHL's plan. Do you feel at least optimistic that the sport is going to return?
Yeah, I've always felt, you know, even when, you know, a week into this thing, I always felt that sports were going to return at some point, whether it be a start of next season or a playoff type thing. I always, that was my own gut and own opinion, but it's, you know, I think it's going to be, I keep using the word, I know I hate to keep repeating myself here, but it's so unique, and a unique tournament like this is something that will be remembered, and something that's in these times is going to be talked about. So listen, everybody wants to get back to work, everybody wants sports to come back, and I'm no different in that aspect.
How do you balance that want to get back to work and do something that you've dreamed your entire life of doing up against the possible health concerns and the health factors too? Because, you know what, we sometimes lose sight of this. NHL players and all athletes, they have families as well, and we need to think about that too.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I work with the PA quite a bit. I've done it pretty much my whole entire career. When I was in New York, I was gifted it when I was a younger player, and it's something that I really enjoyed, and it kind of helped me understand a lot of things. There's your hurdles. I mean, there are things that we have to figure out that are going to give us the best possible way to continue. And families are really important, and they're important to not just hockey players, to everybody that walks the earth. And to be able to play our sport and be safe is always the number one thing. So as we get to the next hurdle, we'll continue to jump them and get ourselves in a position to be able to do everything and be able to play with also keeping ourselves safe.
If we do get the sport back, as we're talking to Derek Stepan, for you personally, how much time do you think you need to get back into game shape and get ready to go and get the chemistry going again with the team?
That is the golden question. I think in order to, you know, to give yourself a chance, and again, it's obviously a different scenario. Most summers I have a little bit more of a plan, but this summer, with everything being the way it is, I think there's a 6-week period that can lead up to a 2-week period. Somewhere in that 8-week range, I think is doable to be hitting on all cylinders. Now, if you get a situation where you don't have as much time, then you don't have as much time, and you adjust and you try to figure it out from there. But I think that's like ideal. You know, that's my goal in the summer, is try to have 6 weeks ramping up till training camp, and then, you know, you hit training camp with your, you know, going 100 miles an hour. So that's ideal. Now, this might be a little bit different. You might have to shorten that, but something like that would be, I think, ideal for most guys.
What do you think, and you've now been in Arizona for the last 3 years, what do you think the direction of this hockey team is, and what do you think you guys did show this year on the ice so far?
Well, I you know, when we talk about our season, we started off the way I think the direction of the team is going. We were playing fast. We were playing hard to play against. We had a goaltender who was standing on his head, and we had our young talent growing into the players they want to be. We got into first place in the Pacific, and we started to feel a little pressure, and in my opinion, we got on our heels a little bit, but then we found it again. And I think the direction of our team is that style. I mean, we want to play fast. We want our talent to go out and make plays. And, when there is breakdowns, you got to have a goaltender and defenders to be the backbone. I think we've taken strides definitely since my first year. There's still a lot of work to go, but I think our younger players are, you know, getting rid of that younger tag and turning into, you know, the those mid-range guys that have to understand it and start becoming your core pieces.
You've had Taylor Hall for 35 games. He's scored 10 goals and 17 assists in those 35 games. We all know how good of a hockey player he is. What have you noticed that he has brought to the club?
Yeah, you know what? He loves the game, which is really great for younger guys to see. I wouldn't call him old, but an older guy who is passionate about the game, who loves watching the other games. He competes extremely hard, which is another great thing. I think the first impression we had was him in San Jose. We were tied 2-2, and he hunted down a puck on a forecheck, created the turnover, and got the puck out to, I think, Ekman Larson, and he scored a game winner 3-2, and we left the building. And I remember talking to reporters after the game saying, listen, I knew he was talented, but what he did tonight just proves just how good he is. And so obviously playing against him, I knew he was a competitive guy and I knew he was a talented guy, but really seeing it firsthand that first night and getting that first impression, it was pretty eye-opening.
A few more questions for Derek Stepan here with us on the Zach Gelb Show from the Arizona Coyotes. You were with the Rangers for a long time. You made your debut with them in 2010. That organization got close many times, and you guys had some long summers as well. And you always played with a lot of passion, a lot of heart, and New York fans, me being a Ranger fan, wearing a Ranger sweatshirt right now, always did respect your game and your style of play. When the Rangers did move on from you and elected to trade you to Arizona, how was that transition, and how difficult of a transition it was with all the bonds that you had in New York?
Yeah, I mean, first off, my 7 years there, we had some great teams. We had some deep runs. I was fortunate enough to play in the playoffs every single year I was there, and was really close. And it's obviously something that our group is bummed about. We still talk about it, just how close we were and weren't able to finish it off. Once that happened, after our, I think it was after our fifth or sixth year, our group kind of knew that the direction was going to change quite a bit and quite drastically. And so when my name had already been, had always been out there. I knew that I was a potential guy that could be going the other, getting out of there. You know, it was, I'll never forget what I was doing. I was just out walking with my son, and my wife was in the house, and I got the call from Gortz, and I just knew right away what was going to be talked about, and I just was wondering where I was going. And so when we landed in Arizona, when you get traded, there's so many emotions. Obviously, New York was kind of home for me and Stephanie, my wife. We, you know, basically started there, and we did the single life together. We had a kid there. We moved up to the suburbs there. It was a big part of our life. And then to kind of get traded, it's a lot of emotions. We had a lot of friends there. We're pretty disappointed and pretty sad that we're going to be moving on. And then you get a call from the next GM, and everything changes. It's excitement. It's such a roller coaster. It's hard to explain. And then you start the process of, all right, I gotta sell all this. I gotta sell my house here. I gotta move down here. I gotta go from New York to Arizona in 2 months. So it was a lot of emotions. Obviously, this is our business. I understand it. I get it. And I was looking forward to the next chapter, and our next chapter was down in Arizona.
Like you said, it is a business. I know you're very close with Henrik Lundqvist. It looks like his time with the Blue Shirts is coming to an end. You know, it's tough for me as a Ranger fan to imagine Hank in another uniform, but it looks like that's going to happen.
Listen, there's a good group of guys that were in there, and none of us ever saw us in different jerseys. There was a lot of us that were, you know, we felt that we were going to be a part of that organization for a long time, and that's not a fault on the Rangers, not a fault on us. That's just the way this world works. And I will be honest with you, to see Hank in another jersey would be very unique to me as well. You know, he's the king of New York, and there's a reason why he's earned that title, and he's done some great things for that city, and that city is his home. So if that does happen, it would be weird to see.
I got to bring up two more moments from that run before we let Derek step on run. I used to like Prust, but after the hit that Prust had on you, I never would root for him again. And then your toughness and able to bounce back in a playoff game and get two goals. How the heck did you do that? I always know hockey players are as tough as they come, but that was really something in that run in 2014.
Yeah, so Prusty, I'm still close with him. After the hit, he texted me. We chatted. I actually went into surgery pretty much the next day. By the time I came out of surgery, the teams were going into morning skate. I actually went to morning skate. I was going to try to play in game four at home. But by the time 12 o'clock hit, I couldn't really eat. The drugs are starting to wear off. I felt pretty groggy. So we made the decision to sit out game four at home. And then after that, on Monday morning, I woke up, went to practice, and got on the flight to Montreal and didn't feel any different. The doctors in New York that did my surgery did an amazing job. For the most part, I was in zero pain with my jaw. The hardest thing with the surgery was food. I wasn't able to put energy into my body. I couldn't eat anything. I was on liquid diet, so it was, you know, soft foods only. And that was the hardest part. So each time we played a game, I'd come home or we'd come back, I'd be just running on E. It's hard to refuel when you can barely eat. So yeah, it was certainly a fun run. And I have no hard feelings to Prusty at all. I mean, we talked. I mean, he came down to Arizona one time, and we chatted, and all is good with me and Pruster. And yeah, it was just a hockey play in my eyes, a hockey hit. And I don't think he believes it was very clean either, but that's part of the playoff hockey, and I'm fine. I didn't miss a game. I probably shouldn't have missed a game. I felt like I could have probably got there, but obviously the doctors and the team made the right decision to try to help me. And at the end of the day, I knew they were right. So yeah, that was cool. That was a fun one for sure.
And before we let you run, Derek, step on, just being in the building for all those runs and all those teams' accomplishments and what they were doing, the loudest I've ever felt the Garden shake in those Ranger playoff games in that 3-4-5 year run was the San Luis goal up against the Canadiens to put you guys one game away to the Cup final. And the second loudest, when I was on that bridge and it was shaking, was your playoff goal up against the Capitals to send you guys to the next round the next year up against Tampa. That goal in overtime, relive it for me a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the moments that in my career I've been fortunate enough to be a part of. And, yeah, it's something that sticks with me forever. I mean, obviously, what a story. We were down 3-1, and I'll never forget it. We were going back to the Garden, and I think it was Hank that sat down. He's like, hey, guys, we're coming back from this. There's no way we're losing this. And actually, I think it was the year before we did it to Pitt. And
yeah.
You know, we just had that confidence. We didn't lose our swagger, and we get to a game seven, and obviously it goes to OT, and you know, a face-off that gets back to our point, and I'm just kind of going to an area, and the puck just lands on my stick. I mean, I had the hockey gods on my side for that one. So it's that moment was great, and we had a lot of great playoff runs and a lot of loud moments, but. You know, I would argue that maybe one of the moments that you missed that was one of the loudest I think I've heard is when Marty St. Louis scored against Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
After Mother's Day. Or, no, after his mom passed away, excuse me. And we had that game at home, and he scored the first goal. I'll never forget the emotion going into that scrum with him and Hags. It was one of the coolest moments in my career, for sure.
And the toughness of that team and how you guys were there for Marty, it was really something special. And those were a lot of fun teams. And, heck, we all wish it resulted in a cup, but that's just the way that the sport goes sometimes.
Hey, listen, yeah. I wish it resulted in a cup as well.
No doubt about that. Well, hopefully we see you back on the ice soon. Good luck to you and your family, and really appreciate you giving us some time here.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
No problem. Derek Stepan will break when we come on back. Russell Wilson, there's a report that he wants a certain wide receiver that needs a home. We'll tell you who that is when we return on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show. The Zach Gelb Show is on the air.
Can these GMs, can these scouts, can these executives, can they do their job and not be disgraceful to the National Football League? Because every stinking year, we hear these types of questions that are asked. And how does that help you evaluate a good football player? How? I just don't get it.
This is the Zach Gelb Show.
And CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line on a Friday is 855-212-4227. It's sponsored by our good friends at Geico. Geico's introduced the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies. For current and new customers that last your full policy term, visit geico.com/giveback for info and eligibility. Good stuff with Derek Stepan a few moments ago. And it looks like we're going to get hockey back. I know Step wouldn't give his entire thoughts on the situation. He is on the executive board for the NHLPA. But there are two reports out there. One, of course, from Jason Greger. The NHLPA has voted not to receive their final paycheck. Also, while not unanimous, some top teams not loving the format. Sources tell me NHLPA will approve the 2014 playoff, that at Jason Greger on Twitter. And then you did have Bob McKenzie, who had the tweet, which was now 2 hours ago. While last night's NHLPA executive committee conference call got a little heated at times, and various individual players still have a wide variety of views on the NHL's return to play format. The exec committee vote by team is expected to result in NHLPA approval of the NHL plan. So there we go. It looks like we're going to get hockey back. I'm feeling good about the NBA as well. Baseball, a little while ago, it felt good. Now with this fight, I don't know. I think there is too much to gain if it's safe for baseball. And if the players are okay with returning, I think there's too much to gain to have the MLB and the MLBPA get in a fight over money. And if that's the reason why baseball doesn't come back is because of money, well, that makes no sense to me. It doesn't. There is too much to gain in terms of popularity for baseball. And you know this, in times that are difficult, and I lived this firsthand growing up in New York for 9/11, the role of sports played an instrumental part in the healing process. I talk about the two memories all the time. Mike Piazza, and today's the anniversary of Mike Piazza actually getting traded to the Mets, but Mike Piazza hitting that home run up against the Braves, and then also Joe Andruzzi, Patriots and Jets, running out of the tunnel with two American flags, Andruzzi of the Patriots and Jets fans embracing in that moment, and at the 50-yard line, you had three New York City firefighters who were Joe Andruzzi's brothers. Those two moments, they provided a distraction in a time when many of us needed a distraction. With all that being said, though, where that is different is we're now talking about a virus compared to a terrorist attack. And with this virus, some players may not feel safe to play. Now, there were players that day that didn't feel safe to play, too, when you look back at the aftermath of 9/11. This, if it's about safety, I understand not playing. If it's about money, that's where we'll leave it. I don't understand why you wouldn't play at this point over money. I did see a tweet from Shams, and this was when we had Derek Stepan on the phone. Former Knicks legend, current Georgetown Hoyas coach Patrick Ewing, says that he has tested positive for the coronavirus. He did release a statement, this via Georgetown. Georgetown University's head men's basketball coach Patrick Ewing has tested positive for COVID-19. Ewing has elected to share his diagnosis publicly to emphasize that this virus can't affect anyone. Ewing said, "I want to share that I have tested positive for COVID-19. This virus is serious and should not be taken lightly. I want to encourage everyone to stay safe and take care of yourselves and your loved ones. Now more than ever, I want to thank the healthcare workers and everyone on the front lines. I'll be fine, and we will all get through this." And it did then go on to say that Ewing is under care and isolated at a local hospital. He's the only member of the Georgetown men's basketball program to have tested positive for the virus. So we do wish Patrick Ewing the best in his road to recovery, and the Georgetown Hoyas head coach and the NBA legend is 57 years old, and he will be turning 58 in August. So we do hope that all will eventually be okay for Patrick Ewing. All right, let's do this. We'll actually break here, and we'll get to Atkin an update in just a second. When we come on back, Russell Wilson, he wants Antonio Brown on the Seattle Seahawks per a report from John Clayton. Get on board, 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. If you're a Seahawks fan, or if you're a fan of any National Football League team, with all that has gone on with Antonio Brown, with what happened in Pittsburgh, then what did transpire with the Oakland Raiders at the time, now the Las Vegas Raiders, and then the Patriots, and we don't even know if Antonio Brown, with the ongoing investigation, will be cleared to play and what the punitive action will be, if at any at all. And you would expect with how long this has been that there will be a punitive action. If your team was interested in signing Antonio Brown, would you be okay with that? 855-212-4CBS. Do you want to see AB in an NFL uniform in 2020? We'll talk about that when we return.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
He
He's live. He's nationwide on CBS Sports Radio. This is the Zach Gelb Show. Here's your host, Zach Gelb.
It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We'll get out to the phone lines in just a second. 855-212-4CBS. Last week we heard that the NBA, there was growing optimism that we would have a return to the sport. We heard this past week that it would be in some sort of fashion a return to the game, and it would be potentially Orlando or Walt Disney World as the leading location as that return in Orlando. And there's been a lot of talk of how the season would look. Some have reported Mike Fisher is actually going to join us coming up in 18 minutes from now to talk Cowboys and the NBA. He said that they're looking at maybe 70 games. So a lot of teams right now at like 64, 65, 66 games. So you would get a small window of regular season games that would lead you eventually to the postseason. We don't know what the format is going to look like. There have been teams, though, that have allowed their players back in the practice facility. Not every team has taken advantage of it. If memory serves me correct, the NBA now is allowed, I think it is 22 out of the 30 teams are allowed to at least open up their facilities. Now, not every team has done that, but there is that growing belief that the goal, if all gets passed and all gets agreed upon, is that teams are going to be able to fully ramp up that preparation for the season, and that could be as soon as June, and maybe you would get a July start has been some of the conversation. You have all different reports, but this is the latest from Woj. ESPN sources tell Woj, you know, through Woj, some franchises in restricted markets, including New York City, Boston, and Toronto, are inquiring to NBA on option for players to bypass returns to those cities in June and report directly to proposed bubbles for eventual start of training camp. So the idea would be what some of the franchises in the restricted markets, some unsafer places like New York City, Boston, and Toronto, instead of going back to their practice facility, which they may not even be allowed to, and in New York, Cuomo did say he would hope that they get sports back soon. It's different clearly by state. But they may be hoping that because of how it currently is in those cities or in those states to just go straight to the bubble and have their return or have their preparation for the season, for the return of the season, get done that way. So that is the latest from Woj. All right, I'm going to give you my thoughts on this in just a second. Let me give you the background, though, as we get back to this Antonio Brown topic, and then we'll squeeze in some calls, too. This is from John Clayton. It's pretty clear the Seahawks want to run the ball even more this year. Now, before this report did come out, we didn't know they signed Carlos Hyde. They did sign Carlos Hyde. And you will also have Chris Carson on that team and Penny as well. We don't know exactly how, you know, the health of all those guys will be, because Carson did have a hip injury at the end of the year, and Rashad Penny did have an ACL injury. So both are overcoming injuries that were suffered later on in the season. But John Clayton did said, even with the Seahawks wanting to run the football more, and they just signed Carlos Hyde for a one-year job, I think it was like $4 or $5 million, something like that, that the report from Clayton is they have loaded up at tight end and tried to stay big along the offensive line, but it's not out of the question for the Seahawks to add another wide receiver. According to sources, Wilson would love to add, that's right, Mr. Big Chest, Antonio Brown. Brown is close with backup QB Geno Smith, whose one-year contract with the Seahawks was finalized on Wednesday. That's the latest from John Clayton, who is now based in Seattle, does a daily talk show in Seattle, and that could be the direction that the Seattle Seahawks may want to move in. I don't know if they are going to want to do that. There is clearly a lot of, you know, actually, you say there's a lot of risk, and there can be risk because you don't know where Antonio Brown is at. It's only going to be a one-year deal after being passed up on or signed and then traded away or cut from three teams in the last year, the last football year where the Steelers gave up on him. Then he went to the Raiders. They moved on from him. Then he signed with the Patriots. They had to get rid of him. And first off, who knows if he's even going to be able to play with the ongoing investigation? And will that factor into your decision? if Goodell gives him an 8-game suspension, are you going to sign AB? If he gets a 4-game suspension, would you sign him? If it's 4, you probably think so. What are the details, though? You probably have to know that first. Or is this going to be a thing where Goodell's going to keep on saying we're continuing to investigate, and eventually he'll just continue to, they'll put him on that player exemplus if a team does sign him, the commissioner's exemplus. If I'm the Seahawks, you see the talent, you may say it's low risk, high reward, and the Seahawks would get the benefit of the doubt, just like the Patriots did with how people respect that organization. If I'm Seattle, though, I don't think it's necessary to bring an AB. And if the Patriots didn't want to keep him, do you want to take that risk? Steelers got rid of him for, what, a 3rd and a 5? And we know what the talent is. He didn't even play a game with the Raiders because he's making a whole big deal about the helmet. And then he's running around like a fool saying, I'm free, and trying to fly around in his backyard when he got cut and recording John Gruden and getting into an altercation with Mike Mayock. There's a lot there, and we didn't even get on into the things that are alleged of him off the field yet, which are really ugly details, and we don't know what is true and what is false. Right now, though, if I'm Seattle, and Seattle has a good culture, and I don't want to say you can manage AB because no one can manage him, but you can bring him in if you want, and then if it gets out of control, then you just release him. But I don't even think it's worth bringing him in, if we're being honest. Where he is at this point, and I can't believe I'm saying that from where we were 2 years ago and how he was the preeminent wide receiver in the game. Now, though, this Antonio Brown, I can't trust him. And I don't think he's been genuine in any remorse so far. And when he tries to be remorseful, it doesn't last that long. I look at that team, though. You've drafted well. You got DK Metcalf last year. That was a very good pick. You still have Tyler Lockett there. You signed Philip Dorsett in this offseason. Tight end-wise, you got Greg Olsen. You got Will Disley as well. You got some things there. And you got a running back room with Rashad Penny, Chris Carson, and now Carlos Hyde. Offensively, I don't think you need it. Does it make you a better football team on paper? Yeah, of course it does. It makes you a better football team on paper. Is that worth it, though? You also have Jacob Hollister in that tight end room, too, who had a few big catches for the Seahawks last year. So you got some weapons right now. Now, you add Antonio Brown on paper. Yeah, sure, Antonio Brown becomes your number one option. He becomes your second best offensive player after Russell Wilson. How long will that last, though? It's tough to have any optimism if you're bringing in AB, but once again, if that's the team that does it, they would get the benefit of the doubt because of Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll. Like, you look around the National Football League, those teams that would get the benefit of the doubt, off the top of my head, Seattle, New Orleans, but they probably wouldn't do that because they did bring him in for that workout last year, and then he made it such a big production. Bruce Arians already said no in Tampa. Baltimore would get the benefit of the doubt. I don't think Kansas City would do it, but they have taken chances on players before that have questionable pass. So you just look at some of those situations. There's only a handful of teams that would get the benefit of the doubt. You could bring him in. There's no guarantee, though, that he's going to play. And there's no guarantee what he's going to look like, not only week to week, but day to day. If I'm building a team, I would build a winner without Antonio Brown. Because Antonio Brown, and there's a lot of guys that are only about himself. Him being about himself, though, has become insufferable. And you see what has happened off the field. Something is clearly not right with him. And that's someone that needs help. Has he been able to get that help in basically the year away? Is that enough time? Only he could tell us. Probably not, though. As we've seen, a lot of ugliness has gone on off the field. Personally, I would be out on AB. If you're Russell Wilson, though, you probably do sit there and say, He'd make our team better on paper. And not that you think you could control him, but it's an environment that has won before. And it's an environment that even if you do bring him in and it doesn't work, it doesn't kill the direction of that football team. 855-212-4CBS. Joel in Colorado. He's next up on the Zach Yelp Show on CBS Sports Radio. Joel, what's happening?
What's up, Zach? I have a couple things that I always try and I try and factor stuff in. I look at anything objectively. So obviously, unless you're a diehard AB fan, you're going to have things that are going to probably detract from your evaluation of him, just given what's happened the past 2 years. But two things. I can't think of very many guys that have had, bad history, bad raps in the league that late in their career, you can go to Chris Carter, that was early in his career, that late in their career have all of a sudden flipped the script. That's number one. Number two, ultimately, it seems like the biggest weakness that most front offices and coaching staffs have, excuse me, it's windy, but is this ultimate arrogance that they can be the one that finally turns a talented player around. And so those are the two things for me. I just say the guy's shown you who he is at this point, and he's an ultimate, a supreme talent, but I just can't trust. And again, you got a young wide receiver there that's supposed to be the future of your wide receiving core as well. So look at the impact, the relationship, the way it deteriorated with Schuster as well. There's no way I can bring him in.
I personally, and thanks for the phone call, Joel, I personally wouldn't bring him in. I'm just giving you that Seahawks side of it. If they bring him in, their thinking would be, okay, we have a good culture. Not that necessarily we're going to change him, because that's on Antonio Brown, but we could bring him in, and it's not a move that we look at as it's a need. It would be a want, and we could definitely survive without him. What's going to make or break the Seahawks this year? It's not going to be their offense. Their offense is more than fine. It's can that defense step up? And can that defense consistently not play great, just play good, like just play well? That's all they need to do. I personally would not bring in AB. But if he could maybe find a way on what you would think would be the last chance, and we said that about New England, then do you take that chance, and if it doesn't work, then you cut him? You can't imagine he has much leverage anymore in this situation. Do I think AB is going to change? No. I don't think he's going to change whatsoever. I'm just not a believer in Antonio Brown, and it's crazy because this was someone that was the best wide receiver in the sport and one of the best wide receivers we've ever seen. Now you don't want to touch him, and the only reason is because he's his biggest enemy right now, and it's his biggest fault is his own self. We'll break here. Mike Fisher joins us next to talk about the Cowboys.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.